Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
You're listening to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media. My name is Dallas Taylor, and I'm here with...
Marietta, everyone.
And I'm also here with...
Itina Farid-Cook.
And I'm also here with...
Jillian Hainsworth.
Yes, it's a room full of poets here on What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thank you for listening. And we want to get right into the conversation. We have the former Buffalo Poet Laureate and the current Buffalo Poet Laureate. Let's start with Jillian. Let's just, for the... hopefully the... final time,
yeah.
The role of the Poet Laureate, how did you start out in that role?
Yeah, so in maybe 2016 or 2017, I got the opportunity to meet Poet Laureate from another city, a new Poet Laureate. And they were telling me like, oh, their city had just established this role. And we were talking about the importance of upholding the tradition of storytelling and like platforming the art of poetry and spoken word as a way to reclaim and hold community narratives. So I remember going to City Hall and I met with a couple different council members. I was cold emailing common council members, introducing myself, saying that, you know, I'm a poet. At the time I didn't really know anybody in City Hall. Like I knew who they were, but I didn't have any personal relationships. So I was introducing myself and I'm like, you know, Buffalo should have a Poet Laureate. Like this person is, you know, tasked with, like I said, holding our community narrative and using the art of poetry to express not only the wants and needs of a community, but also to help describe the identity of that community. Finally, one particular council member was like, yeah, I like it. Let's do it. But like, you got to do it with me because I don't know anything about this. So for about, I don't know, maybe 5 to 7 months, we created this role. We knew that we wanted the Poet Laureate of Buffalo to be somebody who really represented the voice of the community. We knew that we wanted the Poet Laureate to be somebody that all different districts in Buffalo could somehow relate to. We knew that it had to be a role with a term limit because no one person should hold a narrative or an identity in their hands for too long. And we come from a city without term limits, so we all know what happens when you have one person in charge for like 15 years, like nothing changes because there's no new perspective. So we knew like this couldn't be that. So most Poet Laureate roles have a 2-year term. So we were like, okay, 2-year term, learned how to write resolutions. The common council member, his role was really to just get the other common council members to understand the relevance and significance of the role so that they would vote for it. And then in 2021, so we started talking in 2016, but in 2021, that's when it was voted on by the common council. And by then, a lot of people in the community had already like worked with me. I was already the Juneteenth on Jefferson Poet Laureate as proclaimed by just that community. And I remember the council members, they were like, you know, what we want the Poet Laureate to do, like you're already doing. And you spent so much time establishing the role, so like we're gonna vote for you to become the poet laureate. So we had the vote to establish the role, and then we had the vote to make me the poet laureate. So that was like the vision behind it.
And so what is it now become? And then we'll start with you and we'll transition over to IT and kind of bridge that gap of what that role has now become.
Yes, I think the role itself, I think a lot of people in the community went from, what is a poet laureate? There were a lot of people in the poetry community who were like, you know, oh, we tried to get a poet laureate in the 70s or in the 80s, and it didn't happen. I think that role has become very respected in the community. I think that the community has created an inherent value in that role, even one that I will unapologetically say I don't think the city has created an inherent value for. I actually challenge them to do so, understanding like the significance of the role and what's been done in the role from the time I was in the role to now with Itina in the role. So yeah, throughout the community, there's always been a lot of respect. Like people have come to trust the person in this role as somebody who can not speak for them, but help narrate their lived experiences. So that's something that I'm like personally really proud of, because, you know, it went from something that didn't exist to just me annoying City Hall, cold emailing, knocking on doors, not even knowing if these common council members were even in the building, to it being a role that people actually respect, people want to learn more about, and people desire to be at some point.
Yeah. And then we'll toss it over to Itina. And now you are the current Buffalo Poet Laureate. What have you seen? How did you get into this role? And now what are you seeing your place be in this role?
Yeah, absolutely. But I want to first start off by, like, let's recognize all of the work. You hear that from, what, 2016 all the way till like 2021. That's a lot of work that was put in. That's a lot of unknowns. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of typing up resolutions. That's a lot of trying to figure things out, calling people, having conversations, whatever you had to go through to get to this point. It should be recognized and respected. And as I've always said, like, that's dope. You know, that's definitely dope. And it is appreciated, especially in our city, to have that. You know, just like a lot of other cities have poet laureates and they represent their city. So you saw something that was empty, or rather you saw a space. You saw that our city needed it, and you worked your behind off to make it happen. So I'll always respect that. As far as like the transition, it was interesting to get reached out to by two individuals within City Hall at that time to have me come in to talk about taking on that role. And it was exciting. It wasn't the first time that I heard the terminology of poet laureate. As a matter of fact, what's interesting is, I want to say back in 20, can you even say 20-something? Right. But maybe it was like in between 2009 and 2011 or something like that. During that time frame, I would get pulled in to speak during these moments at City Hall. And I would speak to the circumstances that were happening at that time. And I'll never forget, at that time, I want to say it was Deputy Mayor Crystal Rodriguez came to me and asked me, you want to be poet laureate? And I'm like, no. I said no, because I had my son, I was going to school, I had a lot of things on my plate, and I didn't even understand what that terminology was at that time. But I heard about these in other spaces. And so that's like the first time I heard of it. So when it came back again, it reminded me of that time frame. And I thought about the work that you've done during that time frame, where, like, what I've seen during the time of like COVID, and I believe like May 14th occurred, and the different things that you were doing and the voice that you like really pushed during that time frame. It was a very fierce voice during that time. And I admired that work, and saw what you were doing for the community through the use of literary arts. And I'm like, cool, like this sounds great. So I don't want to dig too much into it, but I did ask. I'm like, well, where's Jillian? Like, this is dope. Let's like connect and talk about it and figure out how we want to make this thing, you know, grow and things like that. But I was approached, told about what this position would look like here in Buffalo, the ideas behind it. And then I kind of asked, like, what are the requirements? What do I need to turn in order to, you know, take on the role? I was interested, but I wanted to make sure that I could commit because I already have a lot of responsibilities. And so, you know, I submitted information that they asked for, that they requested, and went about it like that, you know, and took on the opportunity to speak for, I don't want to say speak for the city, more than just like utilize my voice as I see fit, speak to the issues, speak to the passions, from my perspective, in the hopes that others will understand, you know, in this space, when you're using literary arts, you want to use it as a language and you want it to spread, if you will. But yeah, that's kind of how, without saying a whole bunch of things, without the certain people in the room to kind of speak for themselves, that's basically how that went down. And then I reached out to you and we talked about the circumstance. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to get into it, but it was just interesting.
It was messy.
It was interesting.
Let's call it messy. You felt it was interesting. I respect that. I felt it was messy.
Why is that?
So full transparency, like I said, I knew the term was coming to an end. It was my idea to have a term limit. Like, I remember seeing one of the elected officials who was involved in this whole process on my birthday. And, you know, it was my birthday, you know, we saw each other at a bar. So I can't fully recount like the whole conversation, but he did mention it to me. And then I got a phone call maybe a month or so later that was like, the new poet laureate is Athena. And I was like, who's Athena? Who's Athena? And I'm like, who is that? Who is that? So I'm asking around, like, I know some people named Athena. So I'm hitting up random people named Athena. Like, you do poetry? That's what's up. Like, I want to hear it. You know, who's Athena? But there wasn't any other information. I remember talking to this particular person and I was like, you know, well, what was the process? Like, how come you didn't talk to me? How come I wasn't involved? Who was involved? You know, they were like, you know, we changed it. So now, even though the Common Council all the Common Council members voted you in, now it's just the mayor who's going to choose moving forward. The mayor is solely going to appoint. I chose this person because I feel like they are relevant to the culture. Now, me and this person in particular had already had a lot of political discourse over the past few years, spanning from the protests of the summer of 2020 to that moment. We managed to still be able to have a personal relationship outside of our political, like, constant bumping of heads. But to me, it was like, I don't agree with what you do. So how are you solely choosing who this next person is? So we kind of got into a little, I don't know, it wasn't like a big fight, but we got into a conversation about like the process and about how we're gonna go about it. And, you know, I was like, you know, well, what if we have a mayor who only wants to choose somebody whose voice aligns with their voice? Like, what if we run into this issue of one person solely being able to decide what voice represents our community? Like, with me, I had to get approval from all of the council members, you know? I do understand I'm an activist first. Like, my poetry is a tool for my activism. So I do understand that my voice did become very polarizing in the community. I know that I'm not one to mince my words. I know that I am what a lot of people will call a disruptor. And I'm okay with that, you know? I didn't hide who I was from the beginning, and I always was this way. But I just felt like we're giving one person a lot of power when this was supposed to be a role that's really about uplifting the community. So we had this conversation. They were like, well, you're going to get a letter in the mail basically saying that, like, your term is up on December 31st. I'm like, okay, fine. Got the letter. Everything was fine. I remember having an exhibition opening. And that night after the exhibition opening, I went to a restaurant with a bunch of people. And that's when I saw Itina. So Itina was like, oh, I want to talk to you. I remember the words verbatim. You were like, I want to talk to you, and I think you know what I want to talk about. So I'm like, okay, so you walked away, and I was like, what does she want to talk about? I'm asking people at the table. They're like, Jill, I don't know. Like, how would I know? I'm like, I don't know. So the next day was Sunday. Itina texts me like, hey, do you have time today to go out for lunch? But I was exhausted. Like, it was such a long weekend having the opening, had family stuff going on. So I was like, I can't today, but like maybe next week. So Monday comes and I'm leaving my office at the Foundry. Shout out to the Foundry. I'm leaving my office and I'm sitting in my car and someone texts me a link to a Facebook Live. So I click on it and it's a ceremony and they're appointing the next poet laureate. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, first of all, yay that we're continuing the role. Like, you know, we gotta get somebody in there. But what? Like, what is going on? Like, I'm not there. Now, mind you, like Itina mentioned, I was the poet laureate during COVID, during May 14th. It was a lot. It was a lot. There were times where people would call me and expect me to speak to the community in ways that they didn't even expect the mayor to speak to the community. So I'm like, okay, at no point did the mayor acknowledge me. At no point did anybody acknowledge what I was doing in that role as a poet laureate. I did get a chance to talk to Byron Brown about this not too long ago. So just, you know, for transparency, we did get a chance to really talk about it. And I got to express, you know, how I felt about it. But I felt very disrespected. So people were contacting me like, well, how come you weren't there? How come you haven't said anything? So I remember making a Facebook status that was like, congratulations to Itina. She's brilliant. But don't ask me anything about what City Hall is doing. I don't know. I cannot answer any questions because I did not know. I was caught way off guard. The rest of that day, I had common council members calling me saying, you know, we understand that you're upset. You know, my Facebook posts and tweets were kind of doing rounds in City Hall. So people were calling me to respond to things that I was saying, which was basically there's no transparency. Even I, as the founding poet laureate, didn't know that this was happening today. And while I don't have an issue with who it is, I do take issue with the way it happened and the fact that even I had no idea that it was even happening. I feel like women, especially Black women, are always faced with this like disrespect. It's like you can do so much work, but then you're gonna just get pushed to the side. And there are a lot of women in Buffalo who can attest to that. Like Betty Jean Grant, she's done so much work, but you wouldn't know because people don't say her name. You know, so for me, it became less of an issue of who's poet laureate, because Itina, you got it. Like, I'm not concerned about that part of it. It's like, okay, you got it. You're going to represent it. You're going to represent the voice. You got it. But on the other hand, I can't just let y'all blatantly disrespect me and I just go away silently. That's not who I am as a person. Sometimes I wish I was that way, but I'm not. So, yeah, it was a lot of like back and forth. But for me, it was just a lot of confusion because it was like, geez, I did put in a lot of work. I've been doing this for a long time. Like, I knew nothing. I started to get, you know, comments about, you know, like, they love you, but, you know, you can kind of, your voice became a point of contention sometimes for City Hall. And I just had to remind them, but this role is not about City Hall. The poet laureate, you're not representing the mayor. You're not representing City Hall. You're representing the community. So if the Common Council, the mayor, the local government, they say we're going left, but the community is like, we need to go right. As a part of this community, as somebody who truly loves the city, and as a poet laureate, I'm going right. I'm going with the people. I will go against the mayor. Like who wants smoke? Like, I'll go against anybody if it's for what I believe is best for my community. So that turned into like a huge thing. Since then, like, I've never sat down and spoken to the current interim mayor, the council member who, you know, helped establish the role and then later on decided who the next poet laureate was is no longer in office. So it's like, at this point, now I'm kind of moving on to trying to maintain myself, like, as somebody who's just eating off of poetry. But of course, I still have a lot of hopes for the position itself, but I can't for my own sake ignore the level of disrespect that came out of that situation.
So, well, we can talk about that poetry part of it later on in our discussion. If we want to go over to you, Itina, before we go to break in about 5 minutes or so, if there's anything you want to respond to that, or even if you feel comfortable going into how you thought that that process was, as you said, interesting, and then what you're doing now in that role.
Yeah, definitely felt it was interesting. I do not feel like it was fair based off of the information that I received after the fact. In my perspective, because of the work that was put in on Jillian's side, because of the efforts that she made, and because she was obviously like the face of this particular position, in my mind, from my perspective, I'm thinking she's part of the process. And it's unfortunate that as things panned out, you find out this person had nothing to do. I didn't even understand why she wasn't there. That made sense in my mind as a community, especially us being Black women. Like, it would have made sense for us to both be present, for the community to see that this is unification. I thought it was unfortunate and also a missed opportunity for our city to be able to see us in our essence. We're not the same, but we care similarly. Mm-hmm. To be able to stand together and showcase to the community that this is what this is, that would have been beautiful. You know what I mean? I think in response, what I can say and what I've said to you is, like, not that I personally owe you an apology because I didn't do wrong, but it's like that is not fair. And I could only imagine the burden or the weight and however that made you feel, like, in your heart, to put in all that work to come to the point where it's like, not that the idea of it being snatched, but not being able to be part of the conversation or the process, because then now the situation is it's placed on someone else not really understanding the issue. You have to come together as a community to understand the matter to be able to move forward. And I think that that's been the tough part on my side within the position, because of certain things that I'm like, this doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel in decency and in order. I like things to be in decency and in order. And it didn't feel right after things started to unravel and I began to find out certain things. I'm like, well, this doesn't seem right. It doesn't feel right. And to be honest, it doesn't look right. What looks right is for us to work together. What looks right is for us to put our minds together to figure out how we can make the role build and grow and develop. You know what I mean? To be quite honest, that's my mindset. Regardless of what happened, how it happened, the purpose is this. How do we make this exist so that we can pass the torch to whoever is going to take it on from here and let it grow and mature from this point on? You know, that's like my mindset.
Yeah, so We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss more about moving forward and just the poetry community in general. We'll talk about passing the torch. There's a lot of young poets out here in Buffalo. The poetry community in Buffalo is alive. It's very much alive and well. So we can talk about that a lot, passing on the torch and how we play a role in that. And also just this idea of community, and that's what poetry is. That's what poetry speaks to.
Yes.
Just all of us coming together and speaking truth about who we are, where we are, and where we live, and how we live, and just how life is as a Buffalonian. And then, you know, talk about how poets kind of bring that stuff to life. So you're listening to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media. We'll be right back.
The headlines don't stop. The world keeps moving, and through it all, you need news and information you can trust. That's where we come in. WBFO is now Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR. Same station, same trusted journalism, just with a new name. From Morning Edition to All Things Considered, from Group Chat to Friday Night Lights, from What's Next to the BBC, we bring you the stories and smart conversations that matter. No spin, no nonsense, just the perfect mix of news, information, and entertainment. Listen anytime on the BTPM Listen app or btpm.org.
This is Jack Cruiser with The Scoreboard on BTPM NPR. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of The Scoreboard at btpm.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media produced a short documentary on creative restorations, which delivers life-saving supplies to combat overdose in Western New York.
Because we're a new agency, what happens sometimes is, you know, a lot of grant funders, they are hesitant to fund you. So we were on the fence with getting the grant before I sent them the video. It was able to show the grant funder what exactly their money was going to go towards. With that grant, that allowed us to secure a home base. Now we have a location where we do community meals, where we provide services right then and there. So I think the importance is you guys were able to really put boots on the ground with us, really show the city in a lens that you don't commonly see. So I think it helps to raise awareness to some of the issues that we have in our city, but also what else left do we have to do as a community to better our community? Please, if you can, fund public media. Make sure that they're available because they really put a harder focus on the community and it really gives a better view of what we really need to get done here.
Contact Congress now at protectmypublicmedia.org. Local voices, local stories. That's what WBFO brings to Western New York. Help keep it going. Sign up for updates about threats to federal funding at protectmypublicmedia.org. Ensure public media continues to bring essential stories to our community.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Welcome back. You're listening to What's Next. This is Maria Ta, and I'm here with Dallas, Jillian, Itina. We've been talking about the establishment of the position of the Poet Laureate in Buffalo. I think we've been talking about the not-so-surprising fumbles that Buffalo is tend to be known for. But what I'd really like to get into is, where do we go from here? You know, we're in the second cycle of the Poet Laureate. I'll start with you, Itina. Where do you see the position growing while you're in it?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, there should be, just like what we heard earlier, there should be a process in place and a committee of individuals who are able to go through the process of selection, and there should be a submission process and things like that. So just working to try to establish those things. I think that, I know for me, one of the things that I've been doing is just meeting with poets, more so the leaders within poetry. Not that it's all of them. There's a lot of different leaders, you know, obviously in our city, but just sitting down and talking to them and hearing what their perspective is of what this role is and what it means for our city. And in my personal opinion, as I continuously say, is the poets come first for this particular situation. Poets are, should come first. And so, and I'm also including writers, authors. There's a lot, you know, within that space. So just sitting and talking with those individuals, finding out what they're doing within the community, being aware of those things and promoting those things. I would really love for whoever is interested and wants to come into this role, first and foremost, whatever talents and skills that you have, you should be able to showcase those and make the space how you see fit, but also have a feel that you are supported by the community of writers, you know, in literary arts and what have you. So establishing that and hopefully, you know, having that as an existence to whoever the torch gets passed to. And then also in the torch getting passed, like being able to be there in that process to showcase community, even if it's a couple poets, be, you know, if there's a ceremony, that's what's up. But having poets from Buffalo be part of that process, because our city should see that in that space, you know. But that's kind of what I'm thinking of. As far as the moving on, I mean, specifics, obviously, individuals should be able to have some kind of, you know, established situation in their practice. They should be, you know, active writers, active, you know, poets, active in the space of literary arts, and be known within the community to have that type of voice and to spread that in that space.
Yeah, and I think we tend to forget that we're constantly living history, like every day. Yeah. So the fact that this moment is a historical moment,
yeah,
something that we should honor and we should have presence in, right? So turning over to you, Jillian, as somebody who's now a founder of multiple things, but a founder, a founding member of being in a class of poet laureates, where do you see the position going? What's the vision that you have as somebody who is following a history of poets who wanted this to happen, but making it happen in your lifetime? What do you want to see going forward?
I mean, I would like to see the poet laureate, the role of the poet laureate, really be a part of the culture of the city of Buffalo. Like, when we are talking about things our community needs, like, the poet laureate should be there. The poet laureate should be someone who's very connected to the community. You know, the people closest to the problems are closest to the solutions, right? So the poet laureate should never be someone who's detached from the experiences of the people in Buffalo. Every new poet laureate is gonna bring something new. I remember talking to a group of poets when I was a poet laureate, and I was telling them, because I had someone say, like, I don't know if I could be a poet laureate because I don't do what you do. And I'm like, you don't have to sound like me. You don't have to write about what I write about. We're going to have poet laureates who are going to write about the geography of Western New York. We're going to have poet laureates who want to write about the food and the culture of Buffalo. Everybody's not going to write about sustainable community change and social justice. You know, like, that's not, because our identities are more than just that. So I really want, aside from what the poet laureate talks about, the poet laureate to truly be an independent voice, even though you're somebody who is appointed by the mayor. And I really think that, like, if the mayor wants to make the appointment solely, that's fine. But I remember talking to the late Lorna Hill about it before she passed away. And we talked about, like, we came up with this dream committee of people, like somebody from, like, Just Buffalo Literary Center, somebody from Ujima, somebody from that represents, like, the block clubs, because everybody is not going to be known to the art community. Everybody's not going to be known to City Hall. Everybody doesn't know Ujima Theater. Like, we need a wide variety of people who are tasked with finding our next representation, our next representative voice. So I guess all that goes to say, like, to me, the process is the most important part. I remember after Itina's appointment, I had poets calling me and they were like, you know, Jill, when you were poet laureate, like we talked, and I thought I was going to have a chance to at least submit some work. I wanted to put my name in the hat. And it's just like, I understand, like, our next poet laureate, she's amazing. So even if you've never heard her poetry, or, you know, even if you haven't been acquainted with her work, like, trust that this is a good pick. But I do understand that you wanted a chance. So I think just making sure that poets get a real shot, because we don't want the kind of situation where, you know, 8 years down the line, they want to find a poet, but no one's interested because they're like, well, no, because you're just going to pick the next person that you want. You know, like, we really want it to be something that people can aspire to become. The poet laureate is a service role and not like, it's not a crown. You know, it's going to be, you're serving your community. I'd never received payment as a poet laureate, you know? So when I was stepping out as the poet laureate, I'm truly volunteering my time, volunteering my service. So just somebody who, like, is really servant minded, I think is best for that role. So yeah, to me, the future of the role is transparency in the process, making sure we have voices that we can trust, and just making sure that all poets feel like they have a chance at becoming the poet laureate.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree, especially with the transparency and process. There should be a solidified process, which is what, like, I sat down with the current mayor and just kind of talking about what I felt, how important I feel this role is, and I don't want the role to be faded off into the distance because of whatever the case is. There's a lot is happening within our city. We have to be aware of the fact that there are multiple things that are occurring in our city, and one of the things that may not be on the forefront of people's mind is a poet laureate. Mm-hmm. But making sure that it's known that it is important and impactful, how do you do that? You have to build the impact for that particular role, which, when we talk about, like, bringing whoever comes into this role, is going to have talent, skills, reach, network, resources that they're coming with. And that's one of the things, like, that I'm really very interested in pushing. Like, how do you utilize the skill sets and the resources that you have? Well, within my company, I'm able to showcase through digital storytelling. These are the ways in which you can utilize your voice, you know, for years, I'd say 2 decades. I know I probably look real young, but been utilizing the skill set of digital storytelling to showcase the community and amplify the voices within the community. Storytelling, that's why I always say, like, writers, authors. I know we talk poet laureate specific, but there are a lot of poet laureates that are just authors. They write differently. They speak differently. They move in this space, in this capacity, differently. But storytelling and many different ways to showcase the strength and the power of literary arts and what it can do, not only for yourself, but for the community as well. So, like, how can you utilize your skills, gifts, and talents in order to uplift a community? And then we talk a lot about community. Whoever comes into this role should understand that community is all of Buffalo. It spans it, you know. One of the things that when I sat down with the current mayor, I talked about, I said, look, if I'm the poet laureate of Buffalo, I want people to understand that this goes beyond just one side of the space. I don't want you to just see me because of my melanated skin and think that I'm just speaking to those particular things. My lived and learned experiences are allowing for me to speak to trauma, speak to foster care, speak to motherhood, speak to parenthood, speak to education, being an educator in higher education and, you know, working with young people and older people, but being able to speak to these different communities in order to gather them and start to share, you know, share stories. Our stories are gold, and to uplift. How do we span that across? The one thing that I would love to see is for people to realize how much strength the literary arts is, but not only literary arts, but creative arts in general, and how you can utilize that to shape communities, how you can utilize that to bring people together. The human first mindset, you know what I'm saying? So how do you utilize all of these things in order to get people together to realistically is to unify. And I think that's going back to like the circumstances and how this started off. I think that's what bothers me the most, is because it didn't feel unified. And so moving forward, how do we showcase unity? Which is why it's important to gather people. Like, how do you gather people? If we're talking about the poetic scene, like what is the history of that? Where did it start? Where did poetry start for Buffalo? That's very interesting and important to know. Knowing that Lucille Clifton comes from our city, you know what I mean? Knowing that there are different poets who have come in and out. Understanding just Buffalo and their significance, understanding Ojima, understanding all of these different organizations who have added value to this particular scene. Wordism, what is the history of wordism? Where does that come from? Even the poetic society within Buffalo State, like that, they had a very rich history back then. You're talking about like Ngozi poets. Back in the day, how they used to go and like speak at different events and things like that. And then even jumping into like being able to earn as a poet, just bringing up the different importance, you know, the things that are important within this space, and kind of carrying that mindset. I think overall, I want people to understand how important, you know, the process is. One of the other things that you brought up, as far as like not being paid, other cities pay their poet laureates.
Yeah, a lot of cities have
stipends. It should not be a thing where you carry that to say, oh, I'm not getting paid. As an artist, as a creative, especially for me, being that I have multiple businesses within this and have built sustainability and built financial freedom through creative arts, it is something that should be, you know, offered. Which is why that's another thing that I'm trying to push for. So any other poet that comes after me is able to have a budget. Because how can you expect somebody to come into a role and do so many things if they cannot get paid and be able to take care of themselves? You should not be placed in a circumstance in which you have a situation where you're not sure if you're going to be able to make ends meet or not, or be faced up against a wall or not. It shouldn't be a crown to say, oh, I'm doing this for free. That's not fair. And a lot of cities do not do that. They offer their poet laureates a budget so that they can have the freedom to say, okay, I'm going to do a run to do this. This is a desire that I have. I'd like to do this in this role, and be able to feel confident about moving forward within that. So that's something that like I really want to push within this space. No one should ever be in a position where they are uncertain about finances and placed in a role from the city and be uncertain about finances. That should not happen.
And to speak to that, like, I know it's really tough because, like, when you look at other cities, you're like, okay, Sacramento has a poet laureate, and their poet laureate gets a stipend of this amount per mm-hmm. year. And then you look at our city and it's like, we don't even know how this city is going to be able to fix the roads. Like, we don't know how much money is going to be allocated to Buffalo Public Schools next year. Like we're in a super, super hole in Buffalo. So to be like, you know, mayor and budget committee allocate $10,000 a year to the poet laureate, they legit might be like, and where do you think I'm going to get this money from? But we also know that common council members have discretionary funds
exactly.
that they have, yep. they can determine how to use. And even further than that, if you are in the role of the poet laureate, even if the city themselves are not the ones to be like, oh, well, I can pay you, what's stopping the common council members from being like, oh, this college that I teach at, because a lot of them have other jobs, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. needs a speaker, and I recommended you, and they're going to pay you. You know what I mean? Like, right. Even if you are not the economic engine, you have access to so many different forms of economic mobility. So why won't you open those you know, roads and possibilities up to the poet laureate? So I just feel like,
but I
do think the poet laureate should be paid. And I think there are so many ways to get creative to make sure that the poet laureate's career can be sustained, not only as the poet laureate, but beyond. Like, once you're not the poet laureate anymore, you shouldn't have to automatically revert back to what life was like before you were the poet laureate. You should now be able to, you know, elevate a little bit as an artist. And that should come at, like, with help from the city. Like, a lot of things that the poets do, you know, poets, we're used to hustling. We're used to finding our own way. I'm a full-time poet, and I've been a full-time poet since 2022, and it's a constant hustle. I'm not, I don't have a nonprofit, and I'm not bringing in grants constantly. I'm truly living off of writing and performing. So when you have people that are in that position and they are able to elevate to the role of poet laureate, they should, that should come with, that should come with an economic engine that will help sustain you, not just while you're the poet laureate, but beyond your role as the poet laureate.
I definitely agree with that. Like, not, and that's the thing. You, like, for me coming into this role, I know that for me, I've been working my behind off for some years as a creative, and I've moved to the space in which, I know we were talking earlier about sustainability is so important. And understanding how to build financial wealth for yourself. And that takes a lot of effort. That takes a lot of thought process. That takes a lot of delayed gratification. That takes a lot of intentionality, putting money to the side, putting your money into a money market and account so that it stacks up and it grows. You spoke about, like, nonprofit organizations. Maybe some of those nonprofit organizations can, like, support as well, you know. And I know for me, I don't have a nonprofit organization. I have a for-profit business that works with nonprofit organizations, such as another situation that I'm saying, like, if whoever comes into this role, utilize your network. If I have a network, how can I utilize it to add value to the space? What can I do to add opportunities to the space? Who do I know that can add value to the space? If you're listening to this and you want to support the role of poet laureate, how can you do that? What common council member do you know? What kind of support system or role can you create in order to put funds into this space or just create opportunities? There are a lot of opportunities. One in which I know about is a grant for poet laureates that you can earn within the role, if you're taking on the role within the city. And it's a pretty hefty one. And so what I'm trying to do is, like, well, what are those support systems? How can we pull from those support systems so that whoever comes into this space does not feel the burden if they have to take it on? If you are a full-time, like, you know, you say you're a full-time artist, I'm a full-time creative, full-time entrepreneur. How are you able to make a living and a career off this and also support the community? There's so much weight that's placed on this particular role or any role that is looked at or deemed as servitude. And people look at it and say, oh, you should be doing this or you should be doing that. How can one do that and survive if they don't have the other opportunities, you know, to do those types of things? So definitely, I think it should be supported in any kind of way, you know, moving forward for sure.
Yeah. So as we get ready to close out here, first, I want to thank you all for your time. We definitely got to come back at some point to have an even more larger discussion. It is National Poetry Month. Mm-hmm. And as poets, as storytellers, as we call it storytellers, we do tell stories. That's the role of a poet. Final words or messages to all the artists, all the storytellers out there as we're in National Poetry Month, just something to, you know, let them know, or what would you say to the artists and storytellers out there? We can go around the room for this one.
Yeah, for me, to the storytellers, I would say, like, I get it, that it can be heavy. It can be lonely, but it's necessary. And we are in a really unique position because we are blessed with the arts, but we're also blessed with the opportunity to hold a narrative and to share a narrative. So it's a opportunity, but it's also a responsibility. So for all the poets, the writers who maybe don't feel seen, who maybe don't feel like they have been given that opportunity yet, I would say keep writing. Even if you are only telling your own story, you're telling an important story. I got to work with a lot of young poets through the Dunbar Project, and some of them came up to me like, do you think I'll ever have a chance to make it as a poet? Yes, you do. Because if you write poetry, you've already made it as a poet. You're already a poet. You don't have to be a poet laureate. You don't have to win an Emmy. You don't have to be on a huge stage in front of a bunch of people. What you're doing is just as important and just as valuable as the biggest poet you can possibly think of. So thank you for being willing to share your story and put yourself out there and keep going, because you are needed.
Yeah. Etienne?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we need to build up on our confidence within what we do, you know. Own your story. I'll continue to say that, you know, your story is gold, regardless of where you come from. You know, for me, like, growing up on the east side, growing up in a city that's deemed to be one of the poorest in the country, and then growing up on the side of the city that's deemed to be the poorest in that city, you know, growing up in foster care, growing up in these circumstances that most would look at and say, oh, you won't be able to do much. You know, the terminology or the label is failure to thrive. But I thrived. Why did I thrive? Because of my community. It's because of the arts. It's because of my faith and, you know, having that as a foundation. In the foster care system, being deemed and looked at a certain way, no matter where you come from, you can definitely make something shake. I know I can. I did it. You know, I made something shake. I made something for myself. And I'm living free because of it. I'm owning every circumstance that I'm in, you know, and it started. It literally started with storytelling. I was in a counseling session because of the trauma that I endured during, you know, childhood. And I was told by the counselor, you seem like you cannot get your emotions out. Here's a pen, here's a piece of paper, write it down. I fell in love with that process, just pen on paper. And ever since then, I've been trying to instill that same idea to young people, to older people. It doesn't matter to me who you are or where you come from. Your story is gold. You have to own it and then you have to share it. I feel fortunate to be able to live a life, a free life, to be able to share my story, not only through, like, yes, poetry, but through digital storytelling, through film, producing film, directing, through, you know, sharing it through building curriculums with individuals. However you do it, just get it done. However you hustle and make it happen, just get it done and share it. Don't be afraid to share.
I'm always so, so grateful to share space with y'all. I think the two of you know that for sure. What I'll add very quickly is, as somebody who is a recovering perfectionist, don't wait for it to be perfect. Yeah. Work until it's perfect. You got to just go through the process, all right? Everybody's got a gift that they can give, but if you're holding it on for yourself until it's perfect, it's never going to get out there.
Yeah, and I would also add that I'm grateful to be in all your presence. Like, it's really cool to be in a room full of poets. And I would say, use your voice. Your voice is your essence. I learned this when going to my first poetry slam held by Peering Poetry. I heard Brandon Williamson say, somebody out there is waiting to hear your story. Mm-hmm. So share your story, because someone is out there is waiting to hear it. Like, they're waiting to hear your voice, your story. Just, they don't know it yet, but they're going to hear you and say, this is what I need to hear. So keep on going. Thank you again for joining us here on What's Next. Thank you for listening, and you're listening to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.